Right on. We are back live at the Channel 9 live stage here at Microsoft Ignite. I am joined by Mark Krasinovich.
Yep.
CTO of Azure.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Well, thank you for fitting this in. I mean, you've got a number of sessions that still have yet to come.
That's right.
And they'll be available. I know some of them are going to be streamed live inside the hot room.
Oh, they are?
As we're calling. So you'll be live on the internet as well for people for some of your sessions. Thank you for taking the time to join
me. No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Always fun to be on the nine.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to give you the exclusive 15 minutes of fame inside of the keynote hall. You've never had 15 minutes of
fame
before.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But then you bring Snover on stage with us.
I know.
On Monday. Remember that?
It was. Yeah, well, I didn't bring him. He kind of tagged along.
He tagged in there. Yeah. He changed your wardrobe.
Yeah.
It was a crazy situation. You're very nice to let him
on. I knew it would have really hurt him to say no.
I had to make sure. He was just on here just recently with Joey Snow. I had to make sure that he was shuffled away and off and out of the perimeter.
I didn't tell him I'm on right now.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't
okay.
know. So.
Well, if you are here, except for Jeffrey Snover, if you are here at Microsoft Ignite, you are welcome to come down and take a look at us here on the Channel 9 Live stage. We're just opposite the expo hall and just in between the food hall and also the reception area. I'm excited. We put out the call for people to ask questions if they wanted to ask a couple of questions coming up. You can ask questions right now to the CTO of Azure, Mark Krasinovich, using Twitter and the hashtag of MSIgniteCH9. We'll be able to filter them, be able to get them on here. If you're interacting with us with the channel9.msdn.com website, there is a form below the video that you can go off and ask questions too. But I've got a question for you.
Sure.
You're 9 months in role here as the CTO of Azure. Do you have a different impression of Azure now, 9 months later, from 9 months ago? I mean, everything changes at the speed of Azure
these days. Yeah, it does.
And any different perspectives for what Azure was like then and what it's like now?
A couple things. One, and this isn't specific to me being in the CTO role, but I've noticed just in the past 12 months a big shift in what we're seeing as far as customers and their perspective on cloud. And I characterize it as when I started in Azure about 5 years ago and I showed up, nobody knew what cloud was, including me. I barely knew what cloud was.
Yeah.
Nobody understood. I was
still very much a server hugger by then. So.
Yeah, and it's as they call it. Nobody knew what IaaS was or PaaS was or SaaS was. You could define the words and they still didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years in, people knew what those were. And then you had a lot of people saying, but on-prem is still better and cheaper and more secure and we're going to stay here. You guys that are off doing cloud stuff, have fun. Mm-hmm. And then another year in, and people are starting to say, I do think that there's value and opportunity in the cloud. We do need to be more agile, which is the big value proposition of the cloud. And then in the last 12 months, it's changed from people recognizing the value but not really starting to plan to people coming and saying, how do I get started? A lot of companies starting to say, I've got to get started. And a lot of companies saying, we're betting our business on cloud. And that's a big thing that I've seen over the last 12 months.
I've seen a number of furious whiteboarding sessions going on in the expo hall over there at the Azure cloud area for engineers and product team members going through and architecting and drawing diagrams of different people to be able to get things across. Very exciting times for sure. We've got a question that's coming up here, the very first one. It's not even anything to do with Azure time to time. It's about your authoring career. It's like asking Yuffie Sirup, when will we see the next installment of Windows Internals books? Do you still do any of the internals?
No,
books
I don't.
Anymore?
So the last one I did. The last one I did was the 6th edition, which came out in 2012.
Right.
The two-parter that took a long time and actually had some other people help with that one as well.
Yeah.
Because I'd already switched to Azure, and so my time was starting to shrink on how much I could devote to the Windows internal stuff. But after that was released, my life is really, in terms of immersion in Azure and cloud, it's gone progressively, it's gone exponential. So at this point, I just have zero time to spend on something like that, which isn't core to my role.
You might want to start considering maybe doing like an Azure internals version, but you'd have to make it electronic only.
Yeah.
And maybe push it up in Git and then have updates that can happen. People can fork off.
That's the problem is, you know,
it changes so fast.
It does. And so it requires a huge investment just to get the content out. And there's such a broad surface area now. So basically, you'd start at one end of the platform, go to the other, and everything that you started on would be obsolete. You'd have to start. It's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge or something.
It's continuously being painted. How about this one here? I've asked a question that I was interested in when I was thinking of how to go about doing this particular introspective view of Azure. Has there ever been a feature or a solution or some kind of technology piece within Azure that you were really, really excited about, but you couldn't talk about?
And yeah.
It's like, you know, Christmas Day, I can't tell you what the kids, what the present's going to
be. Actually, there's been a bunch, and a bunch of them have just coincidentally
been
announced just in the last couple of weeks
or
a few months. So when I'd come on Channel 9 a few years ago, and I'd be talking about what I was doing in Azure, and I'd say, oh, I'm working on application model, a cloud application model.
Being very broad.
Yeah. And what I was actually working on and referencing there was Azure Resource Manager.
Oh, okay.
So Azure Resource Manager being a cloud application model where you can describe complex cloud applications. And by cloud applications, it means more than just the compute that you stick inside of a virtual machine.
Right.
It is a composition of services, of instances of different services, or what we call resource instances, mm-hmm. that let you compose them together and define an application which consists of PaaS and even SaaS services holistically, so that you can manage the application as a single unit. You can manage the whole lifecycle of the application, and so that's what it was aimed at. And that was 3 years or more.
Three years.
Actually, from the time of kind of vision,
yep.
working with a bunch of people across the teams, including people in the server team and the data team, to come up with the vision and then start executing on it, and then getting it out to production. You know, to be fair, Azure Resource Manager previewed last build
a little over a year ago,
and it GA'd a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. But a key part of it, the resource types for virtual machine, for network objects, and for storage,
right.
just public previewed last week.
You've been busy.
Yeah, so I consider that really the, you know, the filling out of Azure Resource Manager, really making it a true cloud application model once you get those resources in it. So that was huge. And then there's more.
It's still more on top
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
Well, I was impressed. I had an earlier interview that was not part of the live stream with one of the guys that looks after some of the templates pieces. And they were describing that they actually have a great resource to be able to go off and to learn about templates, where they basically kind of categorize them as almost like sessions, or like a 101 level session, a 200 mm-hmm. level session, as far as complexity of templates. Because prior to a couple of weeks ago, you would have to go through reams of lines of PowerShell script
yeah.
to be able to do things like create a new storage account, to be able to go in and create data disks and be able to map them into individual virtual machines. That's all gone now with
the
templates.
And that approach of the PowerShell scripts, that's one of the reasons we went for this declarative, what we call goal state driven engine approach to defining a cloud application, mm-hmm. is that you can look at it and understand it. You say, this is the topology I want. This is the way I want things connected. And the system goes and drives the resources to that state that you've asked for, rather than saying, okay, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? You get a tremendous amount of power out of the system understanding what you want, because if it understands what you want, it can drive the resources to that state in the most efficient way. You don't have to figure out the most efficient way. It can drive the most efficient path to provisioning or updating.
And with the new environment, the way it's able to work, with the declarative state of the files, you're actually able to also go in and not have to worry about creating these objects in a serial fashion like you did with the PowerShell side.
Right.
So it's much more efficient to be able to go off and to build up.
That's right. You give it the relationships between the objects.
Okay.
So you're talking about creating a canonical example of a simple cloud application, kind of 101, which is a website and a database.
Right.
And the database, when you provision it, creates a connection string. And that connection string you need to plumb into your website so it knows how to talk to the database.
Right.
If you do that in PowerShell, it's like, go create the database, pull out the connection string, go create the website, and plumb in this thing as the configuration for it.
I'm just picturing the script getting longer and longer.
Yeah,
longer,
it is.
Longer.
And when you do that with a template, you say, I want a database, I want a website, and by the way, this configuration parameter for the website is the output of the database provisioning, the connection string. And so Azure Resource Manager takes a look at it and says, oh, you need the database first, and then we get the connection string out and plumb that into the website, and you can look at and understand exactly what's going on.
The the feature set that that impressed me with that one there was the level of complexity that you can get of being able to have so many different pieces brought into it. I've been trying to come up with a nice little quick script to do a performance test machine of a DS series machine very quickly to give to a customer to go off and try something. Now it's like, boom, done.
Yeah.
And Mahesh was telling me that now it's simply just one PowerShell command, and then you call the script and it's done. You call the declarative state file,
yep,
and it just finishes.
Yep. That's it. And it's parameterized.
Right.
It's supported fundamentally by the platform, the parameterization of this stuff. So you take the template, which describes the structure of your cloud application, and now you can deploy that to a test environment, a production environment. You can deploy it into two regions and then create a DR scenario. Take the exact same template, just specify the parameters unique to the environment, and you're off and running.
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Corey Sanders when I had him on a little bit while ago. What is your favorite tool to go off and edit these declarative state files, JSON files?
For me, it's Visual Studio.
Do you know what it was for Corey Sanders?
No, what? What?
If you had to guess, knowing Corey Sanders.
Notepad?
What it
was. I don't know what.
He's upgraded to Notepad++.
Oh, okay.
To be able to create them. So we got to make sure that he's actually bought the license to be able to use Notepad++ correctly.
Actually, there's a free version of Notepad++.
Oh, okay. Yes, right.
Yeah. I forgot. I use Notepad++ too. But
okay. Sorry. But it's at least it formats and recognizes JSON files.
Yeah.
So it's good. Have you ever had an aha moment? You're saying you've been working in the Azure space for about 4 or 5 years now, from the very early stages on. Can you think back in time when you had like an aha moment of when you just kind of said, step back after what you did, and was like, I just can't believe I did that across this data center, across these 16 regions that would have been impossible to do before?
Well, when you're working on the cloud at that from where we sit, everything seems so abstract. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we're pushing an update to this region. We're pushing an update to this region. To tens of thousands of machines. Oh, that finished. Let's do the next one. It just seems so abstract.
It's just blowing my tens of thousands of machines. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's all right. It's fine.
So it's really hard to viscerally feel what you're actually doing. The closest I've come is when I took my first data center tour. And it's after I'd been working in Azure for probably 6 months.
The VIP tour?
Yeah.
For Mark VIP,
yeah. So there's a bunch of senior leaders from Azure go to the data center in Quincy, and we get a tour of it there. And we're walking through the aisles of the racks, between the aisles between the racks, and you just see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of servers whizzing, all furiously working, and you're like, that's actually running the bits that when we deploy, it's doing that.
Are the hallways so long that you lose sight in the distance and it curves down?
Right. Because it's like the Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse at the end. You don't want to lose something in there.
That's insane.
Yeah.
We have one here from Amit. Questions came in. Again, you can tweet your questions if you're interested using Twitter, and the hashtag is MSIgniteCH9. I'm watching that one up here. This one is from Amit. Do you see a future where computing devices will just be a set of input and out devices with just enough processing power to be able to connect up to the cloud?
So going all the way back to the dumb terminal world.
And then basically, how far do you think we are from that in the future?
Actually, I don't think so. If you look at the devices like HoloLens, they require an enormous amount of computing power, and there's a whole bunch of computing power that you need to have on the device that where the latency of going to a cloud service is just not going to make that scenario work. I mean, that's microsecond kind of reactions to fool your brain into thinking that it's looking at things in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, I think, Microsoft used to talk about the rich client and the services that they connect to, and I completely believe that there are scenarios and rich client applications where you need to take advantage of serious horsepower on the device and a lot of local compute power there. So it is a world, I think, where when you're taking a look at an architecture of a client cloud or mobile cloud application, being very thoughtful about what parts you keep on the device and what parts you keep in the cloud. And with respect to the requirements of the application, with respect to the durability of the data, with respect to the round trip latencies, so I think that's a deliberate, conscious architectural decision people will have to make, depending on the scenario.
Now, I know you've got a session coming up here. I don't remember if it's inside one of the live rooms. I have to check and see if it is or not. But you're going to be sitting down with Mark Manassi to be able to have a cloud discussion back and forth. You mentioned before we started you're going to go and have dinner with him ahead of time. Do you think, is he a chicken or is he a steak guy?
He makes fun of me for being a steak guy.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I always like, let's go get steak. So so he actually, he'll get fish a lot.
Oh, yeah? He's going down the healthier route. Yeah. I'm a steak guy, too. I don't know. But
and this is a great city to have steak in.
Oh, very, very good city.
Yeah.
When you're sitting down having that particular session, I remember you did one of those last year at TechEd as an example. I'm phenomenally happy that you're doing the same kind of thing here. Was there any question that kind of stood out as something during that particular session that you think would be different now, a year later?
Yeah, actually, so one of the questions was, who are the big players in the cloud?
Yeah,
and
that's changed within.
That's changed a lot in the last year.
Oh, really?
If we've seen the landscape kind of change, and we've seen certain horses run, kind of separate from the pack in a way that I'd already believed what had happened, but you see the world recognizing it.
Yep.
And that is the hyperscale public clouds. Now, when people talk about it, it's us and the book company
the
cloud
book company and the search guys.
Yeah. Well, the search guys actually don't show up much anymore. People were talking about them a lot last year, but not so much this year. When we have customers talking about who they're looking at, and when you see analysts talk about the top cloud providers, and you see articles about the cloud,
right. You're
seeing them not get as mentioned as much. But definitely in terms of companies that are at the hyperscale, it's those three. And then you saw a lot of companies, like a year ago, Oracle was saying, we're public cloud. And there was a lot of buzz about that at Oracle World. And we really haven't seen them gain any traction.
They haven't showed up to the party.
They haven't showed up to the party. And then you've seen some companies kind of fall out of the public cloud that were making a lot of noise about the public cloud. HP, for example, that said, we're a public cloud provider. We're competing with them. No, we're really not competing with them. No, we're really not a public cloud at all. We're just kind of a incubation area for your private cloud deployments.
Okay.
No, we really are a public cloud. So.
I'm
it's interesting.
I will say I'm pretty sure that they've given you at least a multi-year mandate to be able to stay as the CTO of Azure. So that means we're at least going to be all in, and we're definitely there for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, you mean as far as Azure and Microsoft?
Azure.
Oh, I mean, if you
and
look,
you're CTO as well.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
I guess that comes time to review time, but
yeah.
But definitely all in.
As far as Microsoft being committed to Azure, if you look just around this conference center and all of the services that are built on top of Azure. If you take a look at our earnings announcement, it was led by Microsoft earnings spurred by growth of Azure, Office 365, you know. So it is, Satya's made it clear when he talked about the build keynote started with Azure.
Right.
And so that is kind of the signal of this company is built on top of this platform, Azure. Kind of the similar way that the company in the past was built on top of Windows, and that was what we led with. Because the other services are empowered by that fundamental platform that other customers can take advantage of.
Now, you were talking during the foundation session and also with other discussions we had just recently about the Azure Service Fabric.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things where it's stuff that we use internally to get our big horses up and running and working and every day, but now that's available for other people too. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that means?
I'd love to talk. That one is, you know, you talk about things that I couldn't talk about before that I really wanted to talk about, and that one is another incredibly exciting one.
A close second to the...
It is a close second. In fact, I think they're related in many ways because the template declarative goal state driven engine approach that we've got with Azure Resource Manager was inspired by what had already been defined in Service Fabric.
Yeah.
So it's got the same kind of model where you declaratively describe your microservice-based application, give it to Service Fabric, and it makes it so. And that's especially important when you're talking about microservices that can fail because the virtual machines they're on fail, or they fail during an upgrade, or the server that they're on fails because Service Fabric knows what you want. You want three of these things. You want it to be a certain version. And it'll drive the system to look that way, even in the face of failures. So instead of having a PowerShell script on the outside going, is that microservice healthy? If it's not, let me go restart it. Let me find a server and start it again. The system is doing all that for you. It says, you want three of these? Oh, one failed because the VM or server it's on went bad. I'm going to go recreate it on this other this healthy server. So that's just one kind of example of the power you get out of that model. But so the Service Fabric team I worked on getting the Service Fabric team pulled into Azure, the Azure team, about 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And that was basically saying this technology, which had been incubated in the data platform. The SQL group needs to be a core part of the platform and what we build our services on top of. So 4 years ago, it had already been in production for a year and as behind Azure Database. Mm-hmm. And then since that time, it's matured, and now it's powering Cortana and Link and Power BI and wow. Service Bus and Event Hubs. And so the list continues to grow. And battle-hardened over that five-year period in production, running at incredible scale. Microservices, before the world, the word microservice, anybody was even talking about it, just I think it's a place where we've innovated ahead of the industry and done it in a way that it wasn't just locked in our own infrastructure.
In a proprietary way that would require a heck of a lot of
deep entanglements in what we were doing, but in a way that we could actually make available.
5 years ago, 4 years ago, like I can't even imagine what's inside your head right now that you can't tell us, and I don't want you to tell us because we are alive. But definitely exciting times that are there. Another area that's been very, very interesting and very much talked about these days has been in the container space.
Yeah. That's another one that's been years in the making.
Now, you mentioned that, I believe it was TechEd Europe, as for the very first time you're talking about containers, that sort of stuff. What's the current status of it with it now and up in the Azure world?
The current state of containers?
Yeah, containers.
Yeah.
It's still something that's exciting.
It's still definitely exciting. In fact, so we, I've talked about this before, there was a project called Drawbridge out of MSR. It's called a Library OS project. It was containers, and we needed strong isolation for untrusted code that we'd run in our multi-tenant services in Azure. Mm-hmm. And there was no off-the-shelf container technology for Windows we could use. So this is where we worked. We brought the MSR team into Azure and productized it for our own use there. And it's underneath some of our multi-tenant services where customers bring code and we run it in those Drawbridge isolated containers. Well, again, a few years ago, we started working with the Windows team saying, this technology should really be part of Windows. Mm-hmm. And so this was a Windows Server, Azure, three-way collaboration on getting container technologies, both lightweight containers, the Windows Server containers, as well as the strong isolation containers, Hyper-V containers, as core part of Windows, so that everybody could take advantage of it. We could have it be a supported public part of the product surface area that Azure would also take advantage of. And so that has also been something exciting to see happen, really kind of a multi-year evolution, right, from something that we were just using internally to something that's now part of a product that we can share with the outside world.
Mm-hmm. How about areas to watch? Things, other technologies that you've seen that have kind of caught your eye? Like I know I was doing some stuff with Snover just recently with Chef, with NanoServer, that sort of stuff. Is areas to watch, partners getting excited to be able to create stuff as well to work inside the Azure space or things like that?
Yeah, well, so the partner ecosystem, I think, is a place where you're going to start to see a lot of momentum. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a broken record talking about Azure Resource Manager, but that is a key part of this. And if you already look, like some of the announcements we made last week at Build with Mesosphere, for example, take a template that can stand up a DCOS Mesosphere cluster with just a few clicks, which I showed on hundreds of virtual machines.
And it is growing and growing.
Yeah, and just growing and growing.
Super fast.
GitHub Enterprise. Now you can go into our marketplace and click one-click deployment of GitHub Enterprise for your own use as a GitHub repository. Again, enabled through the power of templates. I was talking with GitHub people last week at Build, and they were like, if it wasn't for templates and Azure Resource Manager, we couldn't have done this.
Too complex, too manual.
Yeah, too manual.
To be able to do.
So, and those things are in the Azure Marketplace, and so that's going to be a great place for this ecosystem of essentially cloud application appliances and one-click deployment cloud applications that are provided by these kinds of partners to their customers that are on top of Azure, our joint customers, right?
Nice. In case you're still joining us online at ignite.microsoft.com, you're able to go ahead and tweet us a question or two. We might have some time to still be able to take them as I'm looking at the countdown clock that's going down the road there. We have, let's see, where is that? I just lost that particular question I was looking for.
Yeah.
You've already covered the whole concept of microservices and where it fits in, and also the service fabric as well. Any other small areas that are, I mean, you said there were almost identical as far as your level of excitement is there.
Yeah.
Any other piece that I've missed so
far?
Well,
those are the containers, Service Fabric, Azure Resource Manager. Those are the big ones over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
That I'm really excited about. You know, there's some cool stuff that we're also working on that, unfortunately, I can't talk about.
No.
It's got me excited.
don't talk about that.
And you know, the other thing about this space is, like these things that we're talking about right now, which we couldn't talk about a few years ago, the cloud space is evolving so fast. Great example of this is the company Docker, mm-hmm. which really popularized containers,
right.
is 2 years old. And a year ago is...
2 years old.
Yeah. So that just shows you the rate of change, because this space is so new and it's so disruptive. It's all the old rules are thrown out and new ones come in. Another place we're going to see, we've talked about kind of the application model down to the compute model where there's been disruptions, but you're going to see disruptions at the data center area as well. There's a bunch of cool technologies coming in data centers, which I think are going to really change the infrastructure in ways that applications are going to have to be adapted to really take advantage of it. So that's also exciting to see coming.
Now, in your foundational session with Jeffrey Snover and also Jeremy Winters, you also talked about Azure Stack.
Oh,
and so
yeah. It's actually, I view that kind of Azure Resource Manager and Azure Stack tightly related, but that is incredibly exciting as well. And that's been a while in the making.
So we have Hans here that came up with a question. Well, Azure Stack features lag behind the public Azure features. Are we using the same principles of learn at scale and fast iterations of things up in the cloud environment and then bring them down to the on-premises
right,
side of things?
And there will be some lag. We're still working out the details of what the lag will be, and so you'll see more information about that come out shortly. But Azure Stack, which is Azure Resource Manager and a core set of resource providers, enabling a consistent Azure experience on private and hosted clouds, is unblocking a lot of companies that are saying we want to move to the cloud, but we've got some private deployment, mm-hmm. some places where we need to deploy in our own data centers because of data gravity or compliance or regulation or data sovereignty issues. Mm-hmm. But we want to do it in a way that's the modern cloud way of writing these applications.
Right.
And to be able to move to public cloud when and if appropriate, or back and forth for dev test.
So the ability to go off and take those declarative state files, they could have been deployed here or they could have been deployed over there.
That's right. And you can decide that at some point in time. If that's the application model you adopt and you target that core set, then you've got this mobility of the experience. Mm-hmm. That future protects you, and as well as give you the ability to take advantage of that public cloud as well as private. And like I mentioned, a great example is even if I've got an application that has to run on-prem right now, I can dev test it in the cloud, and then I can bring it back and run it on production on-prem.
Wow. How about last closing thoughts? What'd you think of the Star Wars trailer?
It was awesome. I can't wait. Really excited.
Did you feel like you were a kid again
when
all of a sudden you heard Chewie were home?
Yep.
I just wanted to find out.
I can't wait. I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And I picture being able to go off and...
Episode 4, let me clarify, episode 4, 5, and 6, huge Star Wars fan.
Nice. just to put in the right context for everything.
Yeah.
That's very, very good. Actually, I noticed on your Twitter account that you actually got a chance when you were over in London a little while ago to see... The Battlestar?
Oh, no, actually.
Death Star.
Yeah, that wasn't in London. That's in Seattle.
Get out of town.
Yeah, so there's a...
can you introduce me to the guy?
Yeah. He's got the most amazing prop and Star Wars collection. It's mind-boggling. And he's been doing it for like 20 years, collecting this stuff. But he's got the Death Star from Episode 4 sitting in his living room.
Taking up his entire coffee table.
Well, it's in the corner, but that's, you know, you walk into his living room, it's like, oh, there's the Death Star from that movie blew my mind back.
So did mutual acquaintances happen to connect you two together to be able to do it? Did you stalk him somewhere online? How did you find out?
How did I find him? So there was an article about extreme Star Wars collectors in The Guardian. British newspaper, and they had a video interview of this guy, and he's talking. He's like, "Yeah, and I live here in Seattle." I'm like, "What?" Why have we got
Mark logs on to Azure, does some very deep in-depth searching to be able to find the details about
coming to your house is my destiny.
Mark, I got to say thank you very much for joining us here on the stage.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it. I know you got a session that's going to be coming up after the next one. We're actually going to be cutting over to Ben Armstrong, I do believe. Yes, Ben Armstrong, talking about what's new in Windows Server Hyper-V in the Hot Room, coming up right after this. Thank you.
Awesome.
And stay
Thanks.
Tuned here at Microsoft Ignite.